This is a View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Tuesday, the 13th of October, 2015, and my name is Patrick Smith. The Belfast Giants took on the Coventry Blaze this weekend, and 20 goals were scored. There was a shootout, there were a couple of fights, there was a hell of a lot to talk about. This week we're joined by Matt Nickerson, Simon Kitchen, Todd Kelman, Aaron Murphy, Mark Hitchcock. We've got the fan agenda, we've got the taxi award, we've got loads of stuff. We'll be looking ahead to this weekend's games against the Cardiff Devils. If you want to get in contact with us, at AVFTB on Twitter, podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com is our email. www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast is our website. Of course, we've got Instagram, we've got SoundCloud, we've got Periscope. Just look it up, you'll find it all. What we've also got is this theme music. What a weekend for the Belfast Giants, and no doubt this is going to be a very long show. We've got our brew, we've got some chocolate, it's fruit and nut, but that's no way to describe my two friends who are about to join me. First of all, Mr. David Majewski, he's just been chewing on ice cubes before we started.
Yeah, I feel it helps me tune up for the occasion. Orange and water for me tonight, Paddy. Just looking back through some old pictures there, and I came across one. This edition 2 years ago today, I recorded the intro from my hospital bed. I don't know if I ever told you, mentioned that I broke my leg, but
sound the Davies broken leg klaxon.
It's good to be back.
You never mentioned it. And also, of course, a man who made his debut on Belfast Giants TV at the weekend, and he's coming from a very echoey, empty room, Mr. Aaron Kernan.
Thanks very much. Yeah, it was an interesting evening. Definitely brought a different perspective to the game, and apologies for the echo, but I can't afford any furniture.
There is quite a bit of echo, but we'll deal with it, mate. We'll deal with it. Listen, it's going to be a great show. We've got Todd Kelman, Matt Nickerson, Simon Kitchen's giving us his taxi award, Aaron Murphy, Mark Hitchcock's coming in, but not for what you think. And we also have the fan agenda and various other bits beside. But let's start off with the two games at the weekend. The Belfast Giants in back-to-back competition against the Coventry Blaze. We'll start off with the one with the fewest goals, shall we? The Belfast Giants took on the Blaze I've done this a few times, you'll notice, in one of the interviews, the SSE Arena. They took the one, the Coventry Blaze, and were subject to a 2-1 loss. The Belfast Giants goal coming from Mike Raja, the Blazers goal coming from Godfrey on the power play. Davey, tight and tedious.
We battered the Blaze, for want of a better term, for 40 plus minutes on Saturday night.
Saturday night.
And we just didn't have that little something to unlock the defence. Maybe the Chris Higgins that we talked about last year was very samey as last year. You know, we created a lot of chances. We must have been close on 40 shots, 36, 37 shots through the game. Mm-hmm. We just couldn't figure out Brian Stewart. We didn't get him moving left or right, and we didn't get bodies in front of him. And I think it was one of the interviews that was done with Sizz during one of the period breaks with one of the guys from the NCAA. He says, you know, Stewart's a good big goalie. If you give him time to set himself, he's going to save the puck. He's a big body to beat. And we just did that. We shot from the tops of the circles. We shot from the top of the slot. We didn't get in on top. We didn't go after the dirty goal. We didn't crash in that. We didn't go crashing in after rebounds. And we gave Stewart plenty of time to make saves and get pucks deflected away. We just didn't do enough work in the dirty areas on Saturday night.
The Giants, as you say, lacking Chris Higgins, Johan Idapam, and Mitch Ganzak, who we talked about last week, his match suspension being upheld. Aaron, as Davey says, we'll hear from Coach Walser later on with regards to the post-game interview. You spoke to him, he was quite angry about how the Giants were not really testing Brian Stewart.
He was, yeah. I mean, speaking to him at the end of the game, so far when I've spoken to him, you know, he's been very sort of considered and very good at speaking. This time he was angry. You know, you could see it in his face, mm-hmm. You could see it, or you could hear it in his voice. And I think rightly so. You know, I mean, as Davey said, we did absolutely dominate. I think the Blaze only had some like 3 shots in the first period. You know, we had a lot of shots, but everything we were doing was on the outside. The Blaze, now to give the Blaze credit, they actually played very well. I thought they did a really good job of keeping us on the outside and only shooting from the outside, which, as you say, made it easy for Stuart. But maybe, as you know, Walser seemed to think that the guys weren't willing to get in and try and get on top of Stuart and make it difficult for him.
I remember texting you, Paddy, during the game, mm-hmm. towards the end of the game on Saturday night, and just going, this is the playoff semi-final from last year. This was Walser, Chuck Weber's game plan in Nottingham last year when we got to the semi-final of playoffs, and he brought that game plan, and they played it to absolute perfection again on Saturday night. They rode a hot, not even a particularly hot goaltender, they rode a very, very good goaltender to overtime and penalty shots, and they'll take their chance with the extra point that way. They didn't really come expansive looking to try and get the win. They came looking to try and get the point and see what they could get in the bonus situation, and it's worked out very well for them. But we have to learn lessons from this, that we have to be better, we have to be creative, and we have to work harder, and we have to get into those dirty areas, get down into the crease and get the dirty goals.
Well, Stevie, talking about the goals there, it was Mike Raja who broke the deadlock about midway through the game. I say Mike Raja, not as Giants, Belfast Giants TV came in straight away with Aaron, with Craig Peacock.
But yeah, they look very similar from a distance.
But Davey, Mike Raja with the opening goal of the game, and you thought that maybe from there the Giants would take hold, but it never really happened.
Fournite steps in there, tries to take a punt, lays it right out front. Walser fakes it. It's great play. Look at the patience he has with that puck. Tries to fake a shot. There's a bit of a coming together from Noble and Fournier in front. Walser right on the chuck doorstep. And it's into the net! Craig Peacock!
Absolutely fantastic play on the blue line there from Derek Walser to make that chance for Craig Peacock.
What a play. Is it Peacock or... I'm trying to see who that is. I thought it was Craig Peacock that got it, but it might be proved wrong here, and it could be Mike Raja.
Almost from that point, sort of midway point that we scored that goal, sort of halfway through the second period, it sort of almost made us think, well, that's the goal, that's behind, you know, we've got one behind him now, we'll go on and win. And we sort of, our passing went from there a little bit, you know, our passing was pretty crisp up there. We've talked about the domination in terms of possession, time in the attacking zone. You know, watch it back, it was a dominant performance. We really performed well for 40 minutes. And then it was sort of, we lost our patience. We talked about the last week, playing the Walser system, the Walser style game. We lost that, and we weren't passing the sticks, we weren't passing the tape, we weren't getting anywhere near the same amount of shots, we weren't winning the same amount of face-offs, and we weren't winning battles. And from we scored the goal, yes, it all started to come fray about a bit.
The equalising goal from the Coventry Blaze, Aaron, Josh Godfrey, with a bit of a... from a defenceman, he'd taken a bit of a speculative shot from the blue line, took a bit of a tip and went past Stephen Murphy.
Point. Cunnell sacrificing the body was Jonathan Boxall, taking away the whole bottom of the ice for him. Godfrey does well, throws it towards the net. Sindle net from the blue line. Stephen Murphy had a lot of bodies in front of him, and we have a 1-1 tie. Goal from Josh Godfrey. Power play goal.
Straight in, yeah.
Yeah, don't think it was there.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those ones. It was a strange one. He just threw it towards the net, and I think there were a lot of bodies in front of Murphy. I doubt he saw where it was going, but it sort of almost went, you know, as you say, I think it did take away deflection as well, but it just sort of flopped into the net. It wasn't really even a big shot or anything. And to be honest, I think at that stage, it almost felt like it was inevitable that it was going to come at some point. You know, the Blaze had come back into the game a bit, and... You know, as Davey said there, the Giants just weren't quite sort of at their best.
Before we come, Davey, to talk about the penalty shots and subsequently on the end of the game, I want to bring it back 40 seconds into the game. Nickerson against Vlahovic. Of course, Vlahovic being part of what took place with Chris Beach over in Coventry a couple of weeks ago. We'll hear from Matt Nickerson in a short while, but obviously, as I said to him there, a number was taken and it had to be dealt with.
Works here, looks as if he's ready to go.
Yeah, they look like they're well.
Chin straps are getting ready, and Looks as if the sticks are going down.
There we go.
Hang on, I'm going to let you call this.
Thank you very much. So coming up to centre ice, Vlahovic and Nickerson. Gloves off, helmets off.
Right on their feet.
Yeah, just shooting each other out a minute. Just not quite.
Size those two guys.
Oh, it's unbelievable, isn't it? still not quite. Yeah, they're talking to each other still. Not moved in.
A couple of smiles there as well.
Oh, and
here we go.
Nickerson goes in. Vlahovic working to the body. Nickerson trying to go over the top. A big uppercut. Nickerson puts him down. I think that was pretty
even fight. Yeah absolutely. Yeah, I would say so. A little bit of respect from the two big boys there. You know, the Vlahovic knows he's going to have to stand up and be counted after the punches that he threw at Chris Beach. You know, in all fairness, he may as well throw him at my 11-year-old daughter. Like, you know, Chris Beach isn't going to do anything. He hasn't had a major in 12 years, for goodness sake. So.
Yeah, and Vlahovic was more than happy to answer the bell when Nickerson came out after, you know, after second shift of the game. First line change, and the boos came ringing out for Vlahovic after what he had done to Chris Beach in the Sky Dome just a couple of weeks ago. You know, it was clear from before the face-off took place what was going to happen. And, well, it wasn't much of a hockey fight as far as it goes. You know, the two of them squared off and a couple of digs through and a bit of a hug and fall over. But, you know, I think that'll be something to run play down on the Sunday night. But it wasn't much of a dig, to be honest, was it?
Nah, I don't think so. Aaron, you were handed it by Simon Kitchen with regards to the commentary.
Yeah, it wasn't much of a fight. I mean, it was one of those things. I think it was good to sort of get it out of the way. It was the first shift for both the guys. You know, and their penalties, their multiple penalties, as it turned out, 2 plus 5 they both got for it. I believe it's been clarified for taking their helmets off prior to the fight by the referee, Stefan Hogarth. Actually, that's something I have to say. I think Hogarth had actually a really good game on Saturday night, and I think we've been pretty harsh on a lot of referees and officials this year, and I think he actually did a very good job of the game on Saturday, and I think it's worth sort of noting that.
David?
Yeah, he wasn't bad.
You had a bit of a chat with him on Twitter?
And yes, and credit where it's credit's due when there. That shows not the power of social media, but the accessibility, if you like, to the likes of referees. And it was credit to him for actually coming back to us, explaining his decision. I still think he's incorrect by the rule book there, but I've went back to him with a supplementary. He hasn't got round to answering that yet. I don't know whether he will, but The best thing about a referee is if you don't notice him, and you didn't really notice Hogarth too much on Saturday night. There was a lot of both games, and even the game that we played in Coventry a couple of weeks, have been really chippy affairs. And, you know, Sunday night we'll go on to in a bit, but it was virgin borderline nasty at times, and Saturday night was the same. And I thought there'd be more sort of housekeeping from the likes of Keefe and Nickerson Saturday night. It didn't. Just the only bit of, you know, business was Vlahovic and Nickerson in the first few minutes, the carryover from the other game. But I think there's a little bit of bubble between the two teams at the minute that'll obviously kicked off a wee bit on Sunday night, which we'll talk about later.
What about the penalty shots? I think most notably Fisher's penalty shot, the first penalty shot, Aaron, which was initially I thought he'd messed it up. I thought it was a fluke, but I've watched it back in replay and it actually looks really good.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's just, it was one of the best I've seen. He just comes in, and as you say, it looks like he sort of dragged it wide. Then all of a sudden, he just one hands it. And I think it's even one hand on the backhand round Murphy's leg. Brilliant go. You know, it's worth the praise it's been getting.
David, it's a bit of a lottery when it gets to that point.
Yeah, I think that's the old Peter Forsberg penalty shot, isn't it? From NHL days going by. Yeah, it was a good finish and all. You know, let's be honest, you can't take anything away from a guy that tries to dangle a guy in a penalty shootout. So credit where it's due. But also at the other end, the first goal for the Giants from James Demaray was another beauty. To sit a goaltender, Brian Stewart, down on his ass and put it backhand high into the net, you know, was another great goal. But fortunately, Drew Fisher then has gone up with his second effort and scored against and taken the extra point away. But yeah, a couple of really good penalty shots.
If you pop the toilet and you miss the first shot of the shootout, get back and watch the replay. It was an absolute cracker. Steps inside again here now. Shot coming in, and he wins the game for the Coventry Blaze. Coventry now have basically taken the shootout winner. They go to celebrate in front of the Giants bench. They'll not be overly happy with that. And it's a 2-1 scoreline here after overtime, and the shootout went to sudden death in the shootout. And with two goals in the shootout itself is Drew Fisher.
Yeah, what we're going to do now is we're going to hear a quite disappointed, if annoyed, Derek Walser.
Hey, Derek, tough loss again tonight on penalty shots.
Yeah, it hurts. I was happy with the jump we had, but there's still more in the tank. My opinion, we had the game under control. All we had to do was keep playing simple. And we got away from it. Took a couple bad penalties again and again. We've addressed it. There's penalties, there's fines. And we'll figure out what we're going to do tomorrow.
Okay. I suppose the key point there, as you say, was the penalties towards the end. I mean, up until then, I thought the discipline had been very good.
Yes, very good. You could see we weren't chatting at the referee. I talked to him throughout the game, seeing who's being verbal, who's not. I addressed the bench, saying stay off the referees. You can't come in every game blaming the referee, and that's just an excuse. You know, I know there's some calls that were missed, but you're going to have that no matter what. But it is a physical sport. You're going to get hit. You're going to miss calls. Things are going to get to happen. Just put it behind you and keep going to the hard areas. And what happened is we lost our cool. A couple guys lost their cool, getting frustrated, not scoring. Took selfish penalties, and they ended up hurting the team.
I'd say prior to that, I thought we really sort of dominated. I mean, we were a lot of the possession in the offensive zone. We just couldn't quite get past Brian Stewart.
No, he's a good goalie. I mean, you let Murph see every shot from the perimeter, he's going to stop 99.9% of them. And that's what happened to us tonight. It's happened to us in Dundee. It happened to us in Sheffield. It happened to us again tonight. So what do? You bring new guys in that are willing to go in there, or the guys step up tomorrow and actually step up and play their game and go in there. If they don't want to do it, we'll find new guys that can.
I guess the key thing is we've got tomorrow night as a chance to put it right against the same team again.
Well, there's still consequences. It is dreadful with a full house like this, great fan support, people here, and we put a game like that together. There is going to be a hell of a skate coming Monday.
Thank you very much, Eric.
No problem. Thank you.
One of the things that came from the fan agenda, Stephen Thompson asks, you know, with the build-up to Saturday being about Boris, did the Giants take their eye off the actual game and get sucked into the antics during it, Davey?
No, I don't think so. I've talked about it right from the start. I thought it was a very dominant performance from the Giants. I don't know why we ran out of steam to an extent after sort of 45 minutes, last 15 of the game. We were very leggy looking. We just didn't play well in the last 15 minutes. We'll let the Blaze come back into it. Now, they didn't come steaming back into it and sort of overall us, but we didn't go attacking as much in the last 15 minutes of the game. We had chances right in the last sort of 10, 15 seconds of the game to win it as well. But sorry, Tomo, I know you come up with a lot of good questions, but I got one of them.
Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that the two guys got it out of the way sort of on their first shift and then we were able to sort of get on with the hockey just.
Yeah,
I don't think it really, you know, I think it was a bit of a sideshow and it was done.
I agree with both you gents. I think that because it was covered in the first opening minute, I think sort of got it out of the way. I think the Giants just struggled. We'll talk about the Blaze more in depth when we come to talk about this next game, but they struggled, especially at home when you've got such a big crowd. It's disappointing. I can tell why Derek Walser is so disappointed. But one note before we move on, and I know you'll want to talk about this, Davey, is Colin Shields' 400th game for the Belfast Giants.
Superb servant of the club. Now 475 points in the Belfast Giants shirt is an absolute phenomenal. You know, he's what 150 points clear of George Iwata in second place there. You know, he's been around the block twice for us now, and there's you've run out of superlative for Colin Shields. He's bubbling along there this season at around about a point a game and just going about his business very, very casually and looking pretty sharp and strong this season. He's came back again. I think someone described it, maybe in Stevie Robinson a couple of seasons ago, that he has that, you know, Lemieux syndrome now, where he'd rather go for the pass, or Tony Hahn syndrome, as you know, to put it into a UK context. He'd rather look for the nice pass now than go for the goal as much as maybe would have went for goals in his younger days. Great servant for the club. Anyone, he's in a very elite club there. You know, there's very, very few players over 400 games. You're talking the likes of Todd Kelman, Shane Johnson, Graham Walton, and maybe Colin Shields is the only other. I can't think of any other players that might be sort of that. And all those players that I've mentioned previously all have their shirts hung at the bridge end of the stadium, you know. So says he's maybe somebody that'll join them in future years, but I think he's got a good few games left in the tail for a while yet.
You say he always goes for the pass, and then the first thing that popped into my head, mate, is that breakaway against, was it Edinburgh on the backhand this season? Just shows you the superb eye for goal.
Yes, and you come to the shootout situation on Saturday night.
Yeah.
And I just wonder why you've got someone of that quality never seems to take penalty shots. It's a funny, we'll definitely ask him. Next time we have him on the show, we will ask him that, no doubt about it. But, yeah, you know, it just a thing, something that confuses me. You would think somebody that's been around as long would have the confidence. I doubt it's a confidence thing. It's maybe something that I'm sure they're practicing penalty shots and training all the time, even for fun. So probably the guys that took them, the likes of Demaray, I don't know who else took them, Raja Forney on Saturday night, probably were practicing them during the week and are coming off with great moves and have the confidence just to go for it there and then on the night. But what a servant of the club, you know. Run out of superlatives talking. He's played for GB for years. He's done it for the Giants. And long may it continue.
Absolutely. And the highlights of that game against the Coventry Blaze at home from Saturday night are available on Belfast Giants TV, and you get that on kingdomofthegiants.com. 3 goals in that game, a few more the following night. The Belfast Giants travelled over to the Coventry Skydome for another game against the Blaze, and they won 10-8. Giants goals, I'll take a deep breath here. Giants goals, 3 for Mike Raja, 2 for Jeffrey Mason, and the other goals came from Garside Beach, Benedict, Lloyd and Demarai. While the Blaze goals, 2 for Tate, Trim, Fisher, Robinson, Tanaka, Lauzon and Quinnell. There were only all but three outskating players got a point. It was the highest scoring game in Giants history with 18 goals and the second highest scoring game in Elite League history. And joining us to chat about it, long-time Belfast Giants fan, Mr. Mark Hitchcock.
Top of the morning to you.
You were there. Bit of a crazy game.
Insane game. I was all due to go down to Cardiff on Sunday night to see, obviously, my other team, because I've got two teams. My second team, yeah, Sheffield. Last minute, an old friend who will remain nameless asked if I fancied the game in Coventry and saved 4 hours of my life. I went there not expecting much, to be honest. I obviously saw the result the night before. I'd been to a couple of Coventry games this season, which was like pulling teeth out of a corpse. But I don't think anybody in the building actually expected what we saw. It was absolutely incredible.
Aaron, it was a bit of the game that defence has forgot.
It was absolutely mental. I don't even know that you can analyse a game like that. I think you just have to enjoy it and move on.
I think the pulling teeth out of a corpse has hit Davey. Look at it, like the Liam Sewell was the referee and put both teams on the power play quite a bit. And it's not really statistics that any penalty kill unit really want to see. But the power play unit, on the other hand, the Giants were 2 from 2 on the power play. The Blaze were 6 from 8.
It was ugly on the power play. There's no doubt about that for the Giants, and down to a number of things. You know, you're asking Matt Nickerson to play probably half an hour a night here at the minute. It's taking its toll on him. Jeff Mason looked a wee bit tired out there. Now, they're just, you know, when you're constantly penalty killing, you know, I don't know how many, give me 2 seconds, 2, 4, 6, 8, 13, 15, 17, 19, 21, 23, 25, 27 minutes of penalty. That's an awful lot of attrition on your penalty killers. And it showed towards the end of the game, you know, they scored two power play goals in the last 10 minutes of the game. You know, we were dead on our feet. Even you look at the likes of the goal, Brian Stewart let in the 10th goal. You know, he doesn't let that in the first period. He was just exhausted. We fired 50 shots at him on Sunday night. Look, it was a great spectacle on TV. I'm sure it was great live, but, you know, I wouldn't like to be, you know, Hitchy was saying the other day, he'd love it to be watching his team 1-10 yet every week. I don't know whether it would be good for the heart or not.
Hitchy?
Well, when I first started going to watch hockey in the 90s, it was like that every week before teams could fork out for an import netminder and before British goalies could win leagues. Note there to Simsy. I was there as a neutral. You joke about me being a Belfast fan. I'm not. I was a neutral. It was just insane. I was sat surrounded by people very high up in the Giants org. I was hobnobbing, more knob than hob. And they were stressed. I've never seen people so stressed during a regular season game that early in the season. It really did look like two offences that were playing for the jobs and two defences that were already looking for new jobs.
And is it really, as David brought up there, is it really that sort of game? You're a Newcastle United fan. The you score 8, we'll score 10. Is that the game we want?
I don't think we'll score 10 that often. I mean, Davey probably has the stats on how many times we've scored 10. I would imagine the number of times we've scored 8 is pretty minimal, or we've conceded 8 is pretty minimal as well. So to have them both happen in one game was pretty exceptional. I don't think I could cope with watching it. I'm glad I didn't have to watch it live, put it that way.
Liam Sewell, referee in that game, as I mentioned, has come in for a bit of criticism, maybe not being able to take a hold of the game. Hitchy, do you feel that's fair?
I don't know. I didn't watch the game and feel it was particularly unruly. There was a hell of a lot of power plays. I'm sure the Giants wish there was 6 less than there were for the Blaze. But with the exception of one moment where I think Noble, who started on Keith and Keith just decided to demolish his face, which was quite fun, actually. I didn't really notice any parts of the game where discipline lacked that much. I don't know what you guys saw when you were watching it on the webcast.
David? There was a few times, there was a few knee and minors, there was a few high sticks to the end, a bit of cross-checking at times, and the two guys on the Blaze commentary from the weekend were most unhappy about the physicality of the almost sleeping at times Chris Beach, which surprised me somewhat. You know, they call him out as one of the dirtiest players they've seen in a while, but I don't see it myself. But
I haven't seen any of the incidents raised by Dops this week. In fact, I haven't seen the game even mentioned by Dops.
No, there was nothing Dops worthy. It was just a chippy. We talked about it earlier, Hedgie, before you came on when we were talking about the first game there. The two games over the weekend were quite chippy. You know, there was a lot going on off the puck that refs may have called on a different day, but nothing that, as you say, nothing Dops worthy, nothing serious. But I go on, like, you this is not supposed to come across as really partisan because I'm a Giants fan and just whatever. Brian Stewart was awful on Sunday night. He will not be one that he'll be replaying, you know, for any time soon. But for me, Stephen Murphy wasn't all that terrible. There's probably only two of the goals that I would particularly put down to poor goaltending. There was a few that he was screened. On the power play, you need your goalie to be the best player, and at times that didn't happen. But he was well screened. A few of the shots were just open scoring chances from low down in the slot where he's got, it's 50-50. It's a low chance for the goalie to save him. The two that I think he would like to have back were both the ones that were roofed over his glove from near in. And that's what you get with a goaltender as small as Stephen Murphy. He's taken away the bottom of the net and both of them have been roofed over his shoulder at what, 70, 80 mile an hour from 6 feet. So it's hard to attribute too much to Stephen Murphy on Sunday night. I don't actually think he was that terrible. Going back, like, I've had to sit, as you know, I'm doing a bit of the stats at the minute, I've had to sit and go through every one of those goals slowly and take different stats on. He wasn't really the fault on them. It's hard to blame the goalie. When your defence goes completely missing, which they did at times, you know, you leave yourself open to high scoring games.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because and I think maybe the goal on Saturday night brought a bit of a reaction as well, even though the goal on Saturday night from Godfrey for me was an absolute freak of a fluke, because he has a speculative shot from the blue line. It takes a tip, it takes a knock. There's about five people in between Murphy and Godfrey, and it hits the back of the net. Now you look online, and of course that's not a gauge of anything. I should know. I post online. You look online, and people are moaning about Murphy not saving it. That's not his problem. That's not his fault. It's if you can't see it, you can't save it.
And we've got a couple of people to call out here, Paddy, don't we? Mark Smallwood, Gordy Kerr, is that their two names?
You remember
the guys we offered the chance to them tonight on the internet on Saturday night, taxi for Murphy. There was more traffic in front of Murphy than there is on the West Link on a Monday morning. He was looking everywhere for it, and it's tipped in front, 3 feet in front of him, a wrist shot from the blue line. You can't blame your goaltender in that. If you're going to let them shoot, get out of the way and let the goaltender see it, or else block it. Do one or two. It's gone through, I think, Boxall. it's gone through a crowd of about three players and taken a knee or something off somebody 2 feet in front of Murphy, and it's dived down the ice and went past his toe. There's nothing you can do there. But guys, if you're going to go on the internet and you're going to slag the goalie, back it up. Have the balls to back it up and have the stats to back it up and the proof to back it up, because you're both wrong. We've offered you an open mic anytime you want that on A View from the Bridge. Come on and put your point of view across, but you better have your stats and facts ready.
And of course, that is open to anybody that wants to come on A View from Absolutely. The Bridge and have a chat. Yeah, that Andrea, even Andrew Anticott's been on here. Even Andrew's been on here. The Aaron, when we spoke last week about the Blaze, we talked about the fact that they only scored 9 goals in the first 9 games. I don't think we expected them to double their season's tally for goals in the space of a weekend.
I don't think so. And even looking at them on Saturday night, they didn't look like they were going to score really, apart from, as you say, the fluky goal that they got. Where on earth the 8 came from? Do you know, I think a lot of the 8 goals, I don't know if Hitchy maybe would agree with this, haven't been there, but it sort of seemed that the Giants' goals sort of seemed, you know, well worked, whereas a lot of the Blaze goals seemed to come sort of off little, sort of, you know, little snipes or little lucky breaks that went to Blaze's way. And, you know, I think it was a bit strange. Obviously, the defense wasn't great, but they seemed to take advantage of just little mistakes. It wasn't as if the Blaze deserved to score the 8 goals.
I'd agree with that. I think Belfast's overall, the goals were sexier. They were more worked. I mean, 6 of the 8 goals, for God's sake, the Coventry goals were power play goals, and they were more, in the words of Will I Am, boom, boom, pow.
You're a big fan of Will I Am?
I do like the Black Eyed Peas early work, yeah. But it's a crazy game. I mean, Coventry all season have been horrific in front of the goal. And, you know, the fans have been crying out for a high-scoring event, and they finally scored 8 and they still lose. I find it quite hilarious.
Well,
yeah. One thing, Paddy, just before you go on with another question, Hitchy there. The one thing that the Blaze did do that you can't criticise, they put the puck on net and they got bodies in front of the goaltender, something we have been crying out for. Yes, we scored some really sexy tic-tac-toe, good passing moves, a lot of speed going, transition speed on Sunday night that we talked about. What we didn't do on Saturday night, we got the goalie moving east to west. But the Blaze did the simple things you talk about. Neil Russell used to talk about it all the time, put the puck on net and good things happen. Net presence, remember he used to say that? That was his catchphrase for about a month last year. There you go, and that one too. You know, that it's the basics of hockey when you're struggling. At least get the puck on net, and that's what the Blaze done on Sunday night, and they got the reward for it.
One of the questions I have as well, I'm going to bring up Chris Lawrence in a moment, Hitchy, so I'll park that for this time. But Chuck Weber, right? Had a bit of a discussion on Friday night with nameless people, and we're talking about Chuck Weber and the fact that he's lost 8 games in his first 11. Now, when we spoke about on this podcast and spoke otherwise about Ryan Finnerty losing 5 on the trot with Brayhead, people are talking about him being under pressure because he's a Brayhead. Chuck Weber's lost 8 out of the first 11. Is he under pressure?
I think he has to be. He came in last year as a messiah. He won them the playoffs, and he had that kind of that new effect that good coaches can have, taking over somebody else's team. But obviously this year it was his team. He was building it. And last year, good old Mark LeFevre all season long was chipping away, saying, "Oh, it's nice to see the team I recruited win the playoffs." Mm. He had this team. He built it. He brought in a franchise player that you've just mentioned his name, and he's already left. And he's throwing the threats out there now. He's got to be under pressure. You know, Coventry aren't, they're not a Sheffield, they're not a Belfast, they're not a Nottingham, they're not an arena team. But I would say outside of the arena teams, even including Cardiff, they are still arguably not the biggest team, but a team that you would expect a lot from just because of the trophies they've won since the Elite League's been formed. And obviously I have no idea about the budgets they've got down there, but they can't be that shoddy with the players they've brought in this season. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how long he's going to have. I can't see him being the kind of guy that would walk away, certainly not. But if you look back to the summer, when Gerard Adams left Sheffield, who was the first name 99% of the Steelers fans were saying, let's bring this guy in? It was Chuck Weber. Before Tomo was even a feasible option. So he's got to be under pressure, but you've got to give him more time. we'll see what they do.
Aaron, if this sort of ties in with a question that came in from Gareth Hewish on the Fan Agenda, he says, does the Blaze poor start to the season show the difficulties being a recruiter as well as a head coach in the Elite League? Chuck Webber having to put together this team when he more or less just walked into a job with as Hitchie says, Mark Lefebvre's team already in place, having to recruit this season, and he's went for players more or less Gardner Conference All-Stars, and it's not working out. Like I say, 8 losses in his first 11 games.
You know, it's funny, actually, from what I've read, I think that James Pease had a lot of... I think the way it worked in Coventry was actually that Chuck Webber told him what kind of players he wanted, and James Pease is actually the one who's gone out and sort of signed them. So I think it is, you know, I think he's had maybe a bit more input, and maybe if it's come down to, you know, one or two guys, Webber's perhaps had the final say there. But I think it is actually quite a similar situation for him in that he's been given the players rather than picking them all himself.
Mm. Divi, as I say, you've been putting a lot of pressure on Brian Stewart, but what pressure on Chuck Webber?
I think there has to be a certain amount of pressure on him. I think Coventry Blaze as an organisation will have made a decision. They'll have set out a mission statement at the start of the season as to what they think they can achieve this year. And I don't believe that with the roster that they have built, that they would be thinking that they can challenge at the very, very top end of the table against the Sheffields, the Nottinghams, and hopefully the Belfast. I think they'll be setting themselves a target of retaining, or at least trying to retain, the playoffs. So there's no point having a knee-jerk reaction at this stage of the season. Got to make sure they're in a position to qualify and qualify well for the playoffs. And I think they'll do that comfortably enough. But, you know, Webber, was it maybe 14 or 15 games? He didn't win at all when he first came in last season. And, you know, he's bought himself a lot of good grace with winning the playoffs last season. So I think that he's probably got a bit more time with the Blaze before they'd be looking elsewhere. But, you know, the other thing is, let's say, hypothetically, they decided to get rid of the coach. Who are they going to bring in? Yeah. You know, are they going to go for another old boys act, another somebody that's been in the Elite League, somebody that's been around the block, or will they go outside like the Belfast Giants have done and been progressive and say, you know, to hell with this old boys club, we're going to go, and if we're going to change coach, we're going to bring somebody new in, somebody with new ideas. And that's what Chuck Webber is. And it's getting the players that have actually played in the Elite League and have got themselves comfortable buying into his role. He's always talking about what they have to do to get where he wants them to be, not what they want, where they have to get to be who they want to be. They have to be Chuck Webber's players. It's just going to be interesting over the next wee while. Just, I think he's got a bit more time.
I think, personally, looking at what they've got coming up in their schedule, it's going to come down to that dogfight with the Storm for that fourth Challenge Cup. But if you look at the group, Sheffield, Nottingham and Cardiff are pretty much there in the quarterfinals already. And there's a game still to play in Coventry between the Blaze and the Storm. And then the Storm's last game, Sheffield at home, who have already qualified, they'll probably be taking it easy midweek before a big weekend in the league. He needs to qualify for the quarterfinals of the Cup. If they don't even finish in the top four of a group, including a team that were thrown together, you know, they had to do a whole summer's worth of work in a week in Manchester, as we've heard many times over the last few weeks. I think that would be a terrible, terrible result for them.
Well, if you've got a couple of hours to spare, the highlights from that game against the Blaze are available from Blaze TV, and you get that on kingdomofthegiants.com. Hitchie, before you go, we brought it up earlier, but your second team, the Sheffield Steelers, did sign today Chris Lawrence, who was released from the Blaze only last week. Now, it's been put down on the website due to injury concerns, no real specifics being put there, but even by the Sheffield Steelers standards, it seems a bit of a strange appointment.
Yeah, it shocked me. I know that Robert Dowd didn't play this weekend. He didn't dress for either game. But apart from him, I've not heard of any other injuries. And I know we've had a tough start with the CHL, so we're about a month progressed into a season compared to other teams. I'm not going to complain about it, you know. If I remember all those years ago bringing in somebody called Paul Lady and sticking him on the fourth line, I'm not going to complain about somebody like Chris Lawrence complimenting the team, and he's got a hell of a lot to prove. And we play Nottingham away on Saturday, which I wasn't going to go to. I might go now because I'm like that. I'm fickle.
Yeah, we know that.
So, yeah, there you go. But you look at his resume, and he's played for some great teams in the AHL, the ECHL, the EIEIO, and he's also played for Nottingham and Coventry. So I don't think there's anything to lose with signing him. There's some people, I think mainly Panthers fans on Twitter, have been saying, oh, that's not the right kind of player for Sheffield. It's going to have a negative effect. How? You know, we brought in Deeds last season. He was absolute dog turd. Just ship him out again. You know, there's nothing lost. So let's see what he can do.
Well, do you know, I think this signing is as much, it's the old Sheffield checkbook hockey game that we can buy here. I think this is as much to stop the likes of Nottingham and the likes of Brayhead throwing a contract under his nose at this stage of the season. I genuinely do.
You're probably right, and it's now referred to as PayPal hockey, but you're right. I think I think it's a tactical... If that is the case, it's tactically brilliant, because... Would he go back to Nottingham? I don't know. I can't remember. Did he leave Nottingham, or did they just not want him back?
By all accounts, well, you go from hearsay and a lot of that. Not hearsay the band, but hearsay...
Wherever you go.
And you set you off. But is that there's a reason why Chris Lawrence wasn't back in Nottingham. There's a reason why he's been released by the Coventry Blaze. And it's not so much of his goal scoring, because he was the top scorer for the Nottingham Panthers and they didn't really chase him down. So it a lot of it's been put down to, inverted commas, attitude. Like you say, Hitchy, if it's a case that, you know, it doesn't work out, then you just let him go. It's already been put down that he's a temporary appointment. So is there any harm in that? And if it is just tactical, will it pay off, Aaron?
I think it will. I mean, he's the kind of luxury player, I think, that'll fit in well with what Sheffield have already got. And, you know, Coventry maybe couldn't afford him because they're struggling and they need to bring in someone who's maybe a bit more keen to work hard. But I think it could be a very good signing, a very astute signing.
Well, listen, Hitchy, thanks very much for joining us as always. Enjoy the rest of the Belfast Giants season, as I'm sure you will.
Thanks, guys.
Before we move on, Davey, there was a bit of a question earlier on about how many times we've hit double figures. You've got them in front of you.
Yes, Paddy, that's actually the seventh time in our franchise history that we've hit double figures. Only the second time we've hit exactly 10. We hit Basingstoke Bison for 10 a few years ago, but we've had... Four times we've hit 11, and once our top ever score was against the Edinburgh Capitals, where we won 12-2 back in Doug Christensen's reign.
This is always good when you hit double figures. There's always a bit of a... You always go chasing it. You always want to see your team hammer another team, and maybe not it being 12-2 or something like that, but in a game where it's like 10-8, you can't help but be entertained. Anyway, part of the weekend was, of course, the fight within 40 seconds between Vallabic and Nickerson. And earlier on, I had a chance to chat with the new defenseman for the Belfast Giants, and there's only one place to start. I think we go straight to it. 40 seconds into the game on Saturday, and the gloves came off, the helmets came off, and it looked like settles had to be scored. You certainly took, seems you took a number in Coventry.
I would have liked to have done it the game previous, but just he wasn't on the ice, and yeah, it was just the thing going after Beach, you know, just got to stick up for your teammates and, you know, make an example that, you know, if that kind of stuff happens, that, you know, we're not going to stand for it, and we're all going to stick together and stand up for each other.
That's the way it has to be, though. I suppose when you see an incident like that and the way that it actually took place, and with Vallabic, I built up to it very much over the week into what a lot of fans were expecting. And were you happy with it?
I mean, it wasn't the greatest fight, but I'm sure we play them quite a bit, and I'm sure we may see each other again over the course of this season.
Well, let's have a look at a quick chat about the weekend. You know, Saturday was a tight affair going all the way to the penalty shots and an unfortunate loss as it was, but Sunday was just crazy.
Yeah, Sunday was that was a whirlwind of a game. I don't know if I've ever experienced the ups and downs like that in pro hockey before. I think we went up 4-1, went down 6-4, up 9-6 to 9-8. Then to 10-8, that was crazy. I mean, there were times where you thought, okay, this is it. You know, we'll tighten up here and kind of ride it out. And then all of a sudden, you know, the game's over and we're talking to each other like, man, there was 18 goals scored here. Mm-hmm. Like, that's absurd. But it was a crazy game, and glad we got the 2 points, though.
Do you take that as a defenseman? Do you look at that, you know, those 2 points? You see that as an offensive victory, but then looking at the 8 goals, you take it, you know, do the D-men take it to heart, thinking we've shipped 8 goals as well? That's something we have to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of look at it as an anomaly. There was a few goals, you know, one hit Wally, one hit the guy in front of me, totally accidental, and went in. They made a couple real nice short side plays that, you know, they are that Lauzon, the high skill guy, and same with that Fisher, I think it was, but, you know, maybe those don't go in. It was a crazy game, and, you know, obviously we do have to tighten up, and I think we did really poorly on the PK, and that had been a real strong spot of ours, so that's something we did talk about this morning, and especially another skilled Cardiff team, big, strong team as well, that we need to make sure we're aware of that coming into the weekend.
You mentioned Coach Walser there, and D-Man himself. How did he take it in practice this week? Were you guys skated hard or just as normal?
Yeah, I mean, we had a good skate today, and we did go over video, and it was mainly of Sunday's game. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't play poorly, but again, like, some of the goals were freaky goals, and I don't think you'll see another game like that this year from us, 10-8, or, you know, it's crazy. But we did dissect a lot of the goals and things, little tweaks and little changes that we could have made, and little tweaks to our system. So hopefully we won't be seeing that anytime soon.
Of course, over the last couple of weeks, I suppose, due to injury and suspension, we've been quite short on D. So a lot of time, a lot of pressure being put on you guys, a lot more ice time being logged. Does that take its toll over the course of the time that you're short?
No, I enjoy being on the ice as much as possible. And, you know, while Johan's down and even missing Higgy, it's, you know, it gets guys into the game more, but obviously you don't want to be playing with 4 or 5D for long periods of time, because another injury, another suspension, and then you're really behind the eight ball. So hopefully we'll get Johan back here soon.
What about your own game, Matt? The fact is, you know, we've known you in the Elite League for quite a few seasons now, and maybe a few guys would look on you as having a bit of a reputation as a more of a physical player. But at the start of this season, especially when we're playing short as well, but most notably at the start of the season, you've been playing a really good D game, and you've been really enjoying your time out in the ice. How do you feel that your game's been this season so far?
I think I've been solid. I'm trying not to be noticed too much, and then that's when I'm playing well. If, you know, people aren't like, oh, he's terrible, or oh, he's great. There should never be that. It's just, you don't notice me out there. I'm just doing my thing, and the physical side of the game takes care of itself. But in terms of play, that's, you know, I want to be a shutdown defenseman, very good in your own end, take care of my own end. And if I can chip in offensively a little bit here and there, then that's a plus.
Fantastic. And then Cardiff this weekend, what are you guys expecting from that?
You know, I haven't seen them this year, but last year they were physical, especially in that little small rink. And, you know, with the addition of, I know they got in Salters, who's a big forward, you know, puts up 30 goals and one of the tougher guys in the league. They're going to be good. So we know this is going to be another big test, just like Sheffield, but this time they're two games at home, and hopefully the fans will be in for a good show over the weekend.
And one last question, how are you settling into life in the city? Are you enjoying it?
Oh yeah, my wife's here, and just showing her around, it's been great. Such a nice place, and going to have to start exploring outside the city now. There's a castle just down the way I'm going to get to, and up to Cave Hill, and just start moving about.
That's brilliant, mate. Well, listen, good luck this weekend. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much.
One of the true gents of British ice hockey. Ding. and also, Davey, a guy who's been doing very well in his Jan shirt.
Yes, he has been on the ice for, must be 8 out of 12 games for on the starting five. He has killed a lot of penalties. He's playing against the other team's top lines a lot. And it has taken a toll on him over the last few weeks when we have been especially short on D. Ganzak being out, Walser being out, Edipan being out, you know, that has taken a toll, because I'm sure he's probably over the last number of years hasn't been used to pushing into the 30-minute plus barrier. Mm-hmm. You know, as we get a healthy D of, you know, a complement of the six import D men that we had at the start of the season, and they're sharing that ice time around more, I think his stock will rise again. I think he's been playing very well, but I think over the last number of weeks, he definitely has struggled, the wrong term, but suffered because of the extra workload. You know, a few stats in front of me that I can't share, but you know, he's doing really, really well in certain areas of the game, and he's been a really good signing for us. He came in and he is fit and he is sharp, but just as I say, just the extra toll on that more ice time than he's used to, I think has taken his toll over the last two or three weekends. But as we get fit again, to reiterate, I think he's going to be a really, really good signing this season.
Aaron, one of the things he says there as well is maybe something that we all say from time to time regards to defenseman, is if you don't notice him, he's doing his job, and that's exactly what he's going after.
Well, good luck with that, because have you seen the size of him in that area? But no, I mean, it's a serious point. He's one of those guys, and he does do lots of little tiny things very well. You know, he's good with the stick, he's good with the poke check, he's good at sort of just playing the man and getting in position. But, you know, I don't think he's ever going to be not noticeable.
Let's have a look around the league very quickly, gents. Dops, nothing really much we can say, except the Dops had a plethora of different people to look over. Jeff Lee, looking at there, his 5+ game for checking from behind. Cal Biggis for his match for fouling. Igor Bobchek, his 2+10 for check to the head. Mikael Lidhammer, 2+10 for check to the head. Ryan Hayes, 2+10 for check to the head. And Cal Flemington, third man in. The Edinburgh penalties there need to be assessed prior to Wednesday's night versus the Sheffield Steelers. And you make up all the conspiracy theories you want about what sort of penalties those lads are going to get. We had a quick chat with a lot of these penalties for the Edinburgh Capitals came against the Manchester Storm at the weekend. And we had a quick chat off the record with our good friend Neil Russell, and he wasn't best happy, Davey.
No, and I can just imagine him on Sunday night after the game, there's pounding away on his laptop, the Dops, you know, get these all reviewed. But in all seriousness, like, a couple of the hammerings that Davey Phillips took were out of order. You know, Flemington goes absolutely berserk in the third man in situation. Davey Phillips is already down the ice, getting his head bit off already. So whatever's happened there, Dops are going to be busy this week. I think the amount of videos coming out, old Seth's going to have to get a new packet of strepsils, because he's going to be handing out. The banhammer is definitely coming down on a few boys this week.
I get a feeling that is going to happen. Now, we've already spoke about Chris Lawrence's move to the Sheffield Steelers. Meanwhile, on Brayhead, they snapped their 5-game losing streak, a 5-point weekend for them over the 3 games that they played. A home win to Fife, a home win to Dundee, and then an away shootout loss to Dundee. But an injury to Rick Jackman, Aaron, and Ryan Finnerty unsure when he'll return. He's a big loss for them in defence.
Yeah, he's been a sort of a key player for them so far, and the one that really their defence has been built around. But, you know, the depth and stuff there as well. We've talked about it before, that the results they've been getting probably haven't been representative of the talent they've got available to them. So I think they'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. One note as well, we spoke about the Edinburgh Cavals and the Banhammer. There's something else being put away, and that's the number 9 shirt. Tony Hand's number 9 for the Edinburgh Cavals will be retired by the organisation. And Davey, I think everybody is more than happy with that.
Tony Hand has been an absolutely unbelievable servant on the ice. He's still continuing his off-ice capacity as coach or whatever, but he's been an unbelievable hockey player. He's taken nothing away from, as someone who loves statistics, especially surrounding the game of hockey, because you can levy things, you can read into, you can drill down into things within the hockey game, within stats. His stats are unmatched by anyone, and they never will be matched. I genuinely don't believe there'd be another, the British Gretzky, if you like. Edinburgh retiring his jersey, I have been saying for a number of years now, especially as you know, I've been saying the author record, I think Tony Hand's number 9 jersey should be retired, a la Gretzky's in the NHL across UK hockey, especially in the top couple of tiers, the IHL, EPL or whatever, something I'd really like to see, but it's a very, very, very well-deserved honour.
Aaron, a former player coach for the Belfast Giants, and a very deserving honour.
It definitely is. I mean, he's still, I imagine he's probably still picking up assists from the bench at the minute. but no, I mean, you know, watching him play in Belfast was an absolute, it was only 1 year, but it was an absolute treat just watching him skate and the ability he had. And I, one thing I'll never forget, you know, is him scoring, I think, and I mean, this is the one that will maybe test you, Davey, but I'm pretty sure he scored the only shorthanded 3-on-5 goal that we've ever scored.
You might be right.
That's a challenge for you, Davey. Go find out. Right, we'll wait here while you're doing it. No, I'm joking. Yeah, I have to agree with both you gents. I think the honour for Tony Hand is, and you know I agree with you, Davey, regards to it being retired right across UK hockey. I think, you know, we spoke last week about, Ash Tate and what he's achieved over the years, and he's right up there as well. But Tony Hand, well, he's the daddy when it comes to all of this. And, you know, you see that even last season at the Manchester Phoenix, he was still one of the top point scorers in the EPL. You don't lose it. It's the first yards in the head, and the guy still has it. He just maybe feels he doesn't have the legs to play anymore, and he's put it behind the bench. But yeah, well deserved honour bestowed on him by the Edinburgh Capitals. Maybe you'll see the Manchester Phoenix do it again as well in the next couple of months. One other point before we move on from the Around the League, gents, is the Elite League reported this week that 30,000 fans watched EIHL hockey this weekend, most of those being the Nottingham against Sheffield game at the Metro. It's not said the Metro. It's at the Metro Radio Arena. That's up in Newcastle. This is the Sheffield Arena and not the Motorpoint Arena, which is what it used to be called. But yeah, it was 7,000 there, but 30,000 right across the league, Aaron, and that's phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing to see the SSE Arena as packed as it was on Saturday as well. You know, I hear that the numbers from last season at a similar stage in the SSE are up a good bit as well this year. So it's fantastic to see in Belfast, and it's fantastic to see across the league as well.
Davey, we know how entertaining this sport is. We watch it week in, week out. It comes as no surprise to us. So seeing crowds start to come in, hopefully that continues.
Absolutely. And it is a direct correlation between the quality of the product that we're getting to see. People are saying all the time here, you interview players, you interview coaches, you interview people around the game. They're saying every year the product is getting better. I think Todd Gatman says in his interview coming up as well, you know, the product is getting better on the ice, and that is encouraging more people to come in and see the game. And credit, like, this is a Belfast Giants podcast, credit to the organisation, the Brooksy Glover, and all, how they get 5,500 people through the doors is absolutely brilliant on a weekend.
It's on a weekend against the... against a Blaze team who at that point was struggling.
And you look at the amount of sport that was on this weekend in and around Belfast, or just on the TV that other people could have been watching. The Rugby World Cup's on, all sorts of things are on, and 5,500 people go down to the SSE. I nearly done it there. Go down to the SSE to watch the Giants. It's absolutely brilliant.
Is that a dig at me because I went to the Rugby World Cup instead of going to watch the Giants?
I would never have a dig at you.
Listen, it was a good time at the Millennium Stadium. Anyway,
Are you going this weekend?
I'm looking for a ticket. I'm doing my best.
I've got to be honest. I was watching a wee bit of it. I was flicking between that and the Northern Ireland match, and the atmosphere at the Millennium Stadium just looked like it was absolutely out of this world.
I mean, it was unreal. I know this is a hockey podcast, but it was absolutely unreal. The atmosphere there, and long may that continue for Ireland going further in this World Cup. Anyway, coming up, we'll tackle your thoughts on the fan agenda while Todd Kelman and Aaron Murphy join us for a chat ahead of the weekend against the Cardiff Devils.
Hi, Simon Kitchen here to announce the AVF TB Taxi Award winner, sponsored by Phonacab. This week's winner is Dave Ailey of Coventry Blaze TV, who made this prediction on Sunday night.
And I think anything other than a tight game would surprise me.
Do you expect another low-scoring game as well?
I would. It kind of depends. We've seen some games here at the Dome where we haven't probably performed as well as we have away. So we'll have to wait and see. But I would, if I was putting money on it, low-scoring, one goal.
Good shout, Dave. So the next time he's in Belfast, he can call Taxi for 80.
Taxi! Taxi!
Taxi!
Every week, we'll be asking you to set the topics of discussion on the fan agenda in associations with our friends at Giants TV. What topics should we be discussing? What questions need asked? The fan agenda will be covered both by us here in A View from the Bridge and our friends over in Giants TV. So get involved on Facebook or on Twitter and use the hashtag TFA. The best addition to the fan agenda will win a free pass to the webcast courtesy of Belfast Giants TV. So let's start. We go back to another one from Stevie Thompson. Is Walser naive to think that only one system will or should work against any other team home and away? We need a plan B. This goes back to what we discussed last week, I guess, in regards to the system and the fact that Derek Walser brings up the system. We need to buy into the system. We need to play to the system. I suppose Aaron, as Stevie is asking, are we lacking a plan B? Do we need a plan B? Should we be studying other teams and playing differently when other teams come up against us?
Well, I think to have a plan B, you really need to get plan A working first, which on occasion I don't think it quite has. You know, conceding 8 goals on Sunday, struggling to score one on Saturday. You know, I think it's a league season. It's a long season. I think if we get the system that Coach Walls is trying to put in place now, of course, we're facing a lot of teams for the first time, so you know, you will adapt as the season goes on, probably once you face teams and you know how to play. So I think we probably will need plan B at some point, but I think it's very important that the guys buy into what he's trying to do now to allow us to maybe then build on that as the season goes on.
David.
Derek Walser hasn't had a full roster to pick from once this season. Haven't played one game with his full quota of players that he has brought in over the close season. So I think until we have the full complement of players fit and playing every week, it'll be hard to say, you know, this is what's going to happen. I don't think it's as straightforward as saying Derek Walser's system is plan A and that's his running. We have a very quick transition game. We've got a very offensive D. I think there needs to be tweaks made there to sort of solidify ourselves a little bit more and make ourselves a bit harder to score against. And that has to come from the coach as well, because as I said to you the other day, he's probably one of the very best wingers in this league.
Mm.
But if he was a bit more, you know, at this stage in a solid day, because there was times on Saturday night when perhaps Jeff Mason has gone round behind the net and his outlet passes to Derek Walser, who's already on the halfway line. You know, we're just very, very offensive, and we knew at the start of the season that was going to be. And hey, if it runs into 10-8 games, as long as we're winning, at the end of the day, we've came away with a home-and-home series against the Coventry Blaze with 3 points. Is that the worst return from the weekend? Maybe, because the Coventry Blaze have been struggling, but 3 out of 4 points with one game away in the Sky Dome, you'd have probably taken that at the start of the season when you're sitting, you know, looking where you're going to be looking for your points over the season.
Just to throw my 2 cents in there, I think, you know, I think it's a good question. I think that saying that Walser is naive, or is Walser naive, they only have one system, I think that's unfair. I look at this week and I've been looking at various press conferences and stuff with Jurgen Klopp coming in at Liverpool, and Klopp can say, I know it's Stevie Thompson supports a lesser team that I can see out the window here, but, I know Klopp is, you know, considered one of the top, maybe one of the top 5-10 managers in world football, and his approach was to say that Liverpool are going to play this way. They're going to play high tempo. They're going to have a system, and when teams come into Anfield, they're going to play against them in the one way. And as Aaron says, you got to have plan A, and maybe tweak and here and there, but do you have to adapt for every single team? Why do you have to adapt? Why not force them to adapt? Why not play your game?
If you get a team like the Coventry Blaze who come in and they sit in and either the trap you or the sit deep and force you the outside to shoot, then yes, you have to adapt what your system is. If your system is just the quick transition and try and get a one-timer shot away, you know, moving the puck around and get the shot away, yes, you need to have that. Probably our personnel, we're talking a lot about our personnel being missing on the D. We are missing Chris Higgins massively. I think we said nearly at the top of the show how badly we're missing that. Just that wee bit of creative spark to change things whenever plan A maybe isn't working. That's not a plan B. That's just somebody needing to put a bit of magic out of the hat. And somebody else has to be that go-to guy. Mike Forney is obviously missing Chris Higgins massively. And you've seen him, I don't want to, I can see the TFA questions here, and I don't want to really jump into another one, but you can see how Walser mixed the lines up on Sunday night. You know, Garside was put with Boxall and Beach. Lloyd and Keefe went with Forney. You know, and those are lines that have never been together before, so those are going to take time to come together as well. And that's got to be an element of where your goals are coming from too, because your forwards aren't used to playing, and they're not exactly sure where the other forwards are going to be. So it's a work in progress, and we're still near the top of the league, and we're going to qualify to the Challenge Cup group. So it's not a panic station thing by any means.
Well, then follow that up with that. As you say, we got Advi Delta too. What do you think the coach needs to do to stop the Giants leaking goals, make changes or shift lines? So it sounds like things you think, you know, don't panic.
Don't panic. The other thing, he has shifted lines around. Obviously, I don't know what the situation with Johan Edepam is, but I'm sure the organisation, if Edepam isn't going to be ready to go within the next number of weeks, they're going to have to look at potentially either Brandon Benedict has been playing really well, and you don't want to lose his offensive prowess, especially when you have Higgy out. You need someone, and Benny is really sparking up front at the minute, so you don't want them playing on D. So what do we do? Do we go out and do we get another D man on the likes of to use Chris Lawrence, obviously a forward, but somebody that's floating about the IHL who is a D man and come in on a 1 month contract or something, just to shore us up at the back? Or now that Ganzak's back, Walser served a suspension, and we've got 5D, we're probably going to be all right going forward. But it's just, he has changed lines, but he's shifted lines massively over the last 2-3 weekends. So it's just So it's just about getting a bit of settled lines now. And for me, a settled roster. We're almost healthy. We're really only Edepam and Higgins short, and Benny's obviously in for Higgy. So we're just the one D man short. So it's just whether we'll go and get somebody or whether we can sit with the 8 pounds back, because, as I say, I don't know what his status is.
Aaron?
Yeah, I think the thing, one of the things you've touched on there that's massive is not having 8 pounds. I think what he needs to do is get 8 pounds back if possible. I mean, if you look at the players' backgrounds, you know, 8 pounds was the guy that was expected to come in and be the sort of the shutdown D-man. You know, along with, I suppose, Nickerson as well. But all the other guys were the very offensive guys. You know, I was expecting to see Edepam playing maybe 25, 30 minutes a night and really against. And unfortunately, he's not there. And I think that hasn't helped.
Mm.
He had came in. He was really like the Calvin Elfring, you know, the sort of the Rolls Royce player, the really calm, experienced head, good on the puck, very, very good positionally. And he had started the season quite well. And it's just, he is a big, big miss whenever you've got a, you know, a massive body as well, and a smooth skating and good passing, good outlet pass D-man. He's going to be missed. So hopefully he's back sooner rather than later and we can really kick on. Because once Walser's got the team that he recruited all together, I think this is going to be a team to watch.
One last question coming from Ryan Donaldson. Trophies are entertainment. Would you rather have vanilla hockey and a title, or entertaining but a trophyless team? Davey?
Trophies for me every time. It's a brilliant question. And if you're going to ask me, you know, for the fan pass, this is the key question for me. Trophies for me every time. You can never forget the feeling you get whenever you win a trophy. But you can't really remember if you look back how you got there. You know, the season where we had the two full houses against Sheffield and we won the league under Doug Christensen just a few years ago. Absolutely fantastic nights out. And, you know, getting that ball and getting to go down the locker room and get your picture with it and all that sort of thing. And everybody that was brought up the Rock or the McCools, everybody was allowed to go with the trophy. Things like that stick with you. Can you remember too many games through the season? You can remember standout moments through Ed Courtney's and Theo's season, you know, the great goal in Sheffield. You remember one or two standout moments.
Yeah.
And even a vanilla team will come up with, you know, standout moments through the season. So for me, trophies over entertainment every time. Yeah, it's great to be entertained. I want to go to hockey. I want our teams to score lots of goals and entertain me. But I'll take a trophy at the end of it.
Mr. Kernan?
I want both.
You want both? You want entertainment? Well, how likely is it?
I don't make any qualms about that.
Yeah, but if you had to trade up?
Oh, well then, you know, it would be trophies. It has to be, really, doesn't it? But, you know, winning is entertaining, no matter how you're doing it.
That's very true. I think, but would you really care?
Well, you know, how many people, how many Coventry Blaze fans were very, very entertained on Sunday night getting beat 10-8? Yeah. They all went home entertained, but they lost ultimately.
Yeah.
I think there is a trade-off there.
I have to agree with the fact that I want trophies. I want success. The Belfast Giants in their 15 years, 16 years, whatever it is, have been a very successful, relatively speaking, organization. I think we spoke this week that they have a winning record against every single team in the Elite League. Is that correct?
That's correct. The only team.
The only team that have a winning record against every other team. And that's because the Giants have been well run. We've had some really good teams over the years. We've always been there competing. We've always been towards the top. Okay. There've been one or two blip years where we fought, but more often than not, we've been there competing. And when you think back, you know, that vanilla hockey always gets thrown up. The fact that that was a boring team or whatever, but we went on the next year to win the league title. Does anybody really care? As long as you're winning trophies. As you say, Davey, you could be losing 10-8 every single night and go home like you haven't seen 18 goals every single night. But if you're losing, you're losing. I'd quite happily go in and take a 1-0 gritty win, boring win in the NIC over the Nottingham Panthers or in the Sheffield Arena over the Sheffield Steelers if that meant that we would go on and win a title. That's what we want. We want to see our team lifting trophies. We want to see yes, we are there. We are paying to be entertained. Absolutely. But you're going to be entertained. There's 60-odd games in the season. You're going to be entertained. It may be the odd dull parts. It's unlikely you're going to have a full dull season. But, no, I think I agree with you. I think Ryan Donaldson's my winner this week, Aaron.
Well, I would go with that as well because
it doesn't really matter because you don't have a chance. Yep, Ryan Donaldson wins the free Giants TV pass. And thanks for everybody for setting the fan agenda. Remember to keep them coming using TFA on Facebook and Twitter. And we'll pass it over to Mr. Kitchen on Giants TV to chat about that. Keep an eye out for it. Let's have a look at this forthcoming weekend. The Cardiff Devils return to the SSE Arena in Belfast to take on the Giants on Friday and Saturday night. The Devils, 8 wins out of their last 10 games on a rich vein of form. They are undefeated in the big blue tent, but they come over to Belfast to play on the larger ice. Obviously, given the fact that they're so good at home, it's all about location, location, location for the Devils with their move taking place in a few months' time. But we spoke to a man who knows all about that.
Happy to say we're joined this week by the only man that's on TV more than Noel Russell. It's Todd. He'll always be the Killer Kelman. And Todd, very welcome back on the podcast.
Thanks, David. Great intro.
Todd, it's been a fairly decent start for you. 6-1 in the league and 3 of the last 8 of the Challenge Cup already. You must be fairly content with the way you have started.
Yeah, definitely. I think last night was a big test for us. We played, the Sunday game, we played Sheffield and going into that, that's kind of one we knew would be a big test for us. As of late, we got absolutely killed by them when we went up there a few weeks ago. And it was good to bounce back and show that they're human, I guess, you know, because I think the whole league was worried that Sheffield were just running away with things. So.
Clearly, Joey Martin being back, he's proved his worth last year. But getting Kirkup back to Cardiff seems to have been a big, you know, seems to be working out well. And I'm not letting Doucette, you know, escape you for a second time also looks to be paying off big time for you.
Third time? Tried to get him to Belfast.
Oh, I will.
He might still be there. Good thing I didn't. The guys we brought in have been great. And I mean, Doucette's he's just a sniper. He just seems to score almost every game. And Kirka Kirka's kind of, for him, probably started slow. But the last few games, he's just been unbelievable. Like, I think Kirk was probably the best player on either team yesterday. He was just incredible. So,
and any other guys for us to watch this weekend? Or are they, you know, Martin, Kirk, Doucette, are they the three guys that are really on fire at the minute?
Marty's been, you know, he got a hat trick, but he had 2 goals before that, and he was probably a little frustrated. But he's a great player. He's such a good player for us. And the difference between Jim Rush for us, we have Sawyer and Alfrey Vine, the team's doing well right now. It's just, you need a balance of scoring right now because just there's so much firepower in the league and the whole league has gotten 20% better. I keep saying it, you know, from last year, every single team's upgraded and which is great because the league is more competitive and it's making more kind of like, whereas when playing one of the Scottish teams or anything like that, it's just it's really exciting right now. So and this weekend should be two great games.
And away from all the import side of things, it's the battle of the British goalies this weekend. Bouncy still to get that win over Murphy, as I like to remind you on a number of occasions. But Bouncy's in a great vein of form. Is this the weekend he breaks the goose egg over Murph?
I hope so. I sure hope so. But who knows? I mean, it's interesting because, like, you know, it's interesting to think if you were Pete Russell and you know, you have a healthy Murphy and you have a healthy Bounds, to see who you'd pick to start, because they're both we'll forget about the hiccup against Coventry. You can't ever really, I mean, every goalie's gonna have a bad night once in a while, but I watched the game actually, and I wouldn't fault Murph on too many of them. So in my eyes, Bouncy's a great improving goalie. I had Murph for so many years, and he was so good for us in Belfast, and still is good for Belfast. But I rate Murphy very, very high. And, I don't want to say anything because I don't want him to bounce back after having a rough game and having the weekend of his life either, you know?
And obviously we've got you in Belfast two nights this weekend. It's a thing that's really came on in the league this last number of years, that there's more and more doubleheaders, and it leads to just, more dramatic circumstances. You've got the night after the first night always has a little bit of carryover from the first night. Something you're looking forward to? Any score predictions for the weekend?
Well, I don't like to get into score predictions, but yeah, no, I really like the doubleheader, and I think, for the diehard fans, the season ticket holders especially, I think it's great because, they get, like in Belfast, there are a lot of home doubleheaders, but for our fans traveling across, it's exciting to be able to go to Belfast. They're really looking forward to it, and it's tough because it's very hard for whoever wins the first game. It's hard to win, beat any team back-to-back nights, and so you just never know what's going to happen. You can have two very different games. Like, I mean, you saw what happened with you guys in Coventry, a tight game on Saturday, and then a ridiculous game the next night, So, but it's always tough. Like, I mean, now that I'm on the other side of things, coming back to Belfast for games, it's an intimidating rink to come into. It's, it's going to be a packed house and, always a big atmosphere there. And so it's daunting, and luckily we don't have guys on this team anymore that haven't played the rinks. That's one good thing we're used to playing there. We've been able to win some big games there last season, and hopefully we can do that this weekend.
You talked there yourself, Todd, of intimidating rinks, and the big blue tent over the last number of years since you've gone down to Cardiff there, and you're filling it most weekends. It's a really intimidating place to go. Just how crucial is that? We were talking on the podcast last week about teams are generally winning their home games this season, and it's when teams are going on the road is a difficulty for them. Are you transitioning better this season, doing better away from home than you have been?
Our two losses are both to big teams in our conference. Like, we lost leadership. And so I think for us, if you look at a schedule, and you never want to, like, peg games that you'd lose, but, like, it's always tougher when you're going against top teams in their own rink, because everyone has... All the top teams are going to have great records at home, and Belfast is no different, and we're no different. But, like, I bet if you look at last year, we probably had the best home record, like Cardiff did, and right now we're undefeated at home. And, we turned over Sheffield twice at home. It is an intimidating rink to play, and it's small. It only holds, 2,300 people, but they're right on top of you. They're, over half of them are season ticket holders, and they know their stuff. They've been following the team for years. They know the chants. They know who to get under the skin of. It's actually quite a good atmosphere when you're part of it, But as a player, it's not a great rink to come to. The away locker room is not the best facilities. It's cold. It's wet. It's kind of what Cardiff's always been known for. Even in the old rink, it was a terrible trip to make for a visiting team because it's not a comfortable place to play. And the big blue tent's like that too. We got to somehow transform that into when we get into the new rink. So.
Well, that segues in probably into one of my last questions. Sir, what about the new rink? How's it progressing? I see the Belfast Giants number one fan, Mark Hitchcock, tweeting you last night about it. He wants you to hurry up and get in because Sheffield obviously just can't beat you on the wee rink.
it's coming along. We go on site probably, every week almost. And we're getting to the stage, it's so hard because I don't know anything about building an ice rink, but there's certain things that you're like, boy, it doesn't seem like they're coming along very fast on this. And then other things, like, you know, like there's a dance studio and a gym, and they both have the wood flooring already laid in them. The suites already have the flooring put in them. You know, you can walk around and see where the offices are and the outline of the locker room. And they're doing some cool stuff. You know, like our locker room's going to have underfloor heating, and we're going to have, you know, a big proper locker room that, you know, probably similar to like what Belfast has and compared to what we have right now. But it's hard to kind of picture it right now because, you know, people think a new rink, like we're not building an Odyssey. We're not building something that's 80 million pounds. We're building a 3,000 seat arena, and it's still tight. It's still going to be a good little atmosphere because it'll be packed out, hopefully. It's, you know, it's probably similar to kind of what Brayhead have, maybe a bit better design than what they have, but, it's exciting for us because, you know, for us, it's been over a year now of me being down in Cardiff, and we really feel like this is our rink that's being specifically built for us, and the fans, you know, waiting a lot of years for it. I mean, you can talk to Thorts about it. When he signed the contract in like 97, I think in Cardiff, and it was supposed to be 2 years in Cardiff and in the Wales National Ice Rink, and then the third year was going to be in the new rink that they've been promised. So they've been promising a new rink for about, Jesus, 17 years.
And I like the way there you said that the home team will have the underfloor heating. I assume the away team, you're just going to take from the big blue tent and just put it next door.
Yeah, we're just going to move the porta cabin to the locker room. And, no, that's actually one of the problems. The new rink is not pretty good. Like, it's the same size as us. We're trying to fix that. We're trying to move a wall right now.
Yeah, you got to take everything you can to get a bit of an advantage. But just like finally, before we let you go, Todd, obviously the NCAA, the Belfast, the Friendship Fours coming in Belfast, that was probably something that you're certainly involved in the very embryonic stages of before you came to Belfast. Is it something that have you games that weekend? Are you going to try and get over? Is it something you'll get watching on the TV? It's going to be an exciting time for the organisation and for the league as a whole.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I think it's going to be, I think it's a great thing for Belfast. Like when you know, people ask me a lot about, you know, like you can answer questions however you want, and I got my Cardiff and my Devils hat on, but like, you know, there's still such an appreciation and a love I have for Belfast and for, you know, the Odyssey and for everything that Belfast was to me. And it's one of those things that I wish I was a part of, you know, like I would love to have been a part of something like this, you know, like the Bruins for me was, a highlight to be involved with that. And I think this is going to be, you know, the NCAA thing, the Friendship Four is going to be something like that for Thorts and for all the people that are involved with it. And, you know, it's very different organizing a big tournament like that than you know, normal elite league games. And I love that. You know, that was kind of the buzz I got for it, was doing big events and stuff like that. And you know, it's one of the things I said towards when they announced, I was like, God, I'm jealous. I wish I was part of that. I wish we could do that when I was still there. So it's one of the things that I miss about it, about Belfast as an opportunity for, I think, with Robert, what he's done. It's nice having a CEO that cares so much and is willing to get behind something like that. You know, like he's a driving force. And, you know, I think that's a big reason why they're able to pull this off, is because he can open a lot of doors and he's going to drive. And it's a success. So I know it's going to be a great event. I'd love to come over and spectate. I'm like you. I need to get the pass. So, you know.
Say no more. I hope Kat's not listening. But anyway, Todd, like, you're born and brought up in Calgary, you're living at the minute in Cardiff, but you're coming home at the weekend. We'll look forward to seeing you.
You're not going to be happy. I'm not coming home. I'm not coming to Belfast this weekend.
You're not making the trip?
No,
shells to put up in the new house.
No, I don't. We actually don't even have a house yet.
We
still don't have a house.
And of course, this Friday's game is the one that's on Premier Sports. And who else are we going to chat to when it comes to Premier Sports? It's our good friend, Aaron Murphy. How are you, buddy?
I guess Neil, the general manager, Russell, wasn't available, eh?
No, we go straight to the top, mate. We always go straight to the top.
Here. Oh, Paul Eady wasn't available either, eh?
You've seen my list. Unbelievable.
Thanks for having me on, Paddy.
Always, always a delight to have you on, mate. It's the second game of the season for you guys on Premier Sports, and you're in the Odyssey, back to the Odyssey Arena for the game against the Cardiff Devils.
Yeah, you know what? Always a good fixture, isn't it? I mean, before the Kelman thing, we all know that that's a storyline now. But long before that, there was a hatred between those two teams. So that's always a good fixture. And a lot of the fans last year, viewers, said that Friday night games were a good way to get the weekend, the hockey weekend started. So hopefully people will tune in and enjoy what should be a magnificent contest between the Devils and Giants.
The Cardiff Devils themselves have actually a really good start to the season. I think they've won like 8 of the last 10 games. And it seems to be a fortress at the big blue tent, but coming away from home, maybe the chance looking to capitalize on the bigger ice.
Yeah, they had a big win over the Steelers this past weekend, didn't they, on big blue tent ice. A little bit tougher on the big ice away from Cardiff Bay, but that's kind of the way the team is set up. And I think it's maybe a difficult year for them because at some point they're going to move into Ice Arena Wales, which is a different kettle of fish. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what Andrew Lord has in store, but there's good goaltending there. Really, really good defensive core offensively from the blue line, and definitely some nice pieces, especially the way they handle Sheffield. But again, different proposition at the SSE Arena or the Odyssey, whatever we're supposed to call it. But you know what? The Giants have had some good games at the Odyssey over the years against Cardiff, so I expect a barn burner Friday night.
Quickly, what's been your take on the start of the season? It's been a bit topsy-turvy, but teams like Sheffield are coming to the floor, Nottingham are coming to the floor, but and then you look up in Scotland, they seem to be beating each other.
Yeah, you know what? When I did the Champions Hockey League, the Brayhead win over Ingolstadt, I thought, gee, if they even play 70% of what they did tonight against EIHL opposition, this is a team that could go months without a loss. So, I mean, it just goes to show you how other teams in that conference have upped their game, because the Clan haven't snuck up on anyone in Scotland. The Steelers, I mean, Paul Thompson, he's got them well drilled, doesn't he? And Matthew Waugh, Tyler Plant, some of the big names have come to the forefront, but then they go to the big blue tent and get handled pretty miserably, right? So I think it's one of those seasons where what I thought coming into the year has been totally blown out of the water by some results. I mean, even Edinburgh and Dundee given Brayhead fits, which I didn't think would be the case after the way Brayhead played in their last few Champions Hockey League games.
What about yourselves on Premier Sports? I know you're coming from commentating on a game in the Swedish Hockey League. It's all go for you guys at the minute.
It's all go. I mean, over 600 games on the network. I'm doing 100 myself, I think, between the Swedish Hockey
Busy
League.
Man.
The Elite League. It's going to be a fun season, but I tell you what, I love doing the Elite League games. Mm-hmm. I love going to Belfast. I love seeing, Simon Kitchen and you guys and some of my buddies around there. So it's a busy, busy season, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. I think you guys have mentioned it on the podcast before. Davey might have asked me, you know, it's a labor of love. Well, it's a labor of absolute excitement. I love going to the rink. I love doing games, and I don't care if it's the Elite League, the Champions Hockey League. I treat them all the same, and I hope people are enjoying them.
And it's you and Paul Eady this weekend?
It is me and Paul Eady. So that should be good. I mean, good insight in our first game at the Storm Shelter there. We had a new feature where Paul actually could talk to the coaches at the end of the period and at the end of the game. So really interesting to see a coaching brain like Paul Eady asking a question to Steve Thornton or Andrew Lord on Friday. So that should be a really neat bonus for viewers.
Fantastic, mate. What time's that start at? Around 6:15, is it?
6:30 pregame
6:30?
Show.
Cool.
And then I think it's 7:05 puck drop. So we'll be live from long before the start until well after the finish, I'm sure.
Fantastic, mate. Well, listen, I know you're a busy man and always rushing between places, so we appreciate your time and thanks for joining us.
Anytime. I always love coming on the show. So we'll talk to you soon, and hopefully we'll see a good game Friday evening.
Thanks again to Todd and to Murph. Gentlemen, let's have a quick chat about this game. Aaron, the Devils, they're playing really strong.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, they've won 8 out of 10. They've beaten the Steelers, who've looked at, a really strong team there on Sunday, I think it was. I'm really looking forward to these games. You know, I think that Belfast are going to have to come out and really, I mean, obviously, more answer the Saturday night issues than, well, actually the both, I mean, the issues that came up last weekend. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how they come out. You know, I mean, the coaches called out the players and said they need to react. And I'm looking forward to seeing, well, hopefully that they do.
Davey, the top five scorers of the Cardiff Devils have scored a total of 68 points. Now, They have firepower. Joey Martin, Thomas Kirka, Guillaume Doucet, Lee Salters, Andrew Hotham on D. They're a dangerous side.
They've got goals. There's no doubt about that. They've got goals in their team, and their forwards are firing. You know, we talked a few weeks ago there about saying that, you know, they've got three top lines, if you like, and the scoring is evenly spread across those kind of nine forwards, and they've all been here, done it in this league before. The likes of Joey Martin, Kirka, who was with them a couple of years ago, Doucet, who Killers in his interview, you know, he says there tried to get to Belfast a number of years ago, and he thinks if it got onto Belfast, it'd still be here. Total sniper, knows where the back of that is. They're coming here and they've got goals in them. We're coming into games and we're, I wouldn't say so much that we're leaky at the back, but we're very, very offensive. So if we're not scoring at the other end, we're going to be in trouble here. So something has to give, you know, or we're going to have another 10-8, you know, blowout here. So I think Aaron's right. We'll have to learn lessons from last weekend and learn them very quickly. And Derek Walser has been very, very clear in a lot of the interviews he does about learning lessons from games. And he'll go in and he'll do the video and they'll work things through practice. I would say this would be a very, very critical practice week for the guys. And they'll be fine-tuning themselves, especially for Cardiff coming here, knowing that Cardiff are going to come here to try and score a lot of goals.
Obviously, a lot of those guys, Davey, have heard the threat from Derek Walser on various outlets, and the fact that there might be players playing for their jobs. How much do you think that lingers in the mind when a team like the Cardiff Devils comes into Belfast?
I don't think so much that players are playing for their jobs per se. I think players are maybe playing for a bit more ice time or a bit less ice time at the minute. You know, players who were doing it maybe have tailed off a little bit and need to step their game up again and come back to the level they were at a few weeks ago. I don't think there's any danger of anyone being handed a 2-week notice or getting the bullet from the Giants at the minute. But there is a danger if they don't step up their physical play, go into the dirty areas. The things that Derek Walser said last week on his interviews, you know, we've stopped going in there. We've stopped trying to score goals. We're trying to score goals from the outside. We need to get inside. We need to get traffic. Things that they were doing in practice last week, getting big bodies in front of the net. And Ben Bounds is in a very rich vein of form, and he's going to need the same treatment that Brian Stewart should have got, this treatment that Brian Stewart got on Sunday night, which was just complete bombardment, 50 shots at him and, you know, attrition. Ben Bounds is going to need the guts of 80, 90 shots at him over the weekend if we're going to win these two games.
Well, you mentioned
we're not going to win these games with 20 shots. You know, we have to get offense. We've got to get bodies in front and we've got to go to dirty areas.
You mentioned that about Ben Bounds, Aaron. It is the battle of two British netminders. And as Davey said in that interview with Todd Kelman, Murphs come out on top every time.
Yeah, but of course, Bounds has claimed the GB spot from him. So, you know, it's an interesting little duel they've got going on. And, you know, I hope that Murph keeps, you know. Last week we said that the Blaze hadn't scored any goals and they hadn't won any games. And the Blaze won a game and scored a pile of goals. So maybe we shouldn't have mentioned that.
Very true. Those two games, as I said, Friday and Saturday night at the SSE Arena, both face off at 7 p.m. Friday's game, Premier Sports with Aaron Murphy and Paul Ailey. And Saturday, if you can't get to the game, it's on Belfast Giants TV with Simon Kitchen and Aaron Kernahan. Johnson?
I think Shane Johnson's back this week.
You did a fine job, mate. A fine job.
Thank you very much.
So get yourself, if you can't get down to the arena, tune into those. Any other business? I've got one myself. Listen, over the last, let's say, year or so, maybe a bit more, there have been more and more hockey podcasts coming online, especially in the Elite League, and some really good ones. And what we discovered not that long ago is that our good friend David McGimsey doesn't really listen. He is such a good part in this hockey podcast that he doesn't really listen to any of the others. So I'm actually going to lay down a bit of a challenge to David to come back to us each week, having listened to one of the new hockey podcasts, and tell us what he thought. And that started, you've listened, first of all, to Claire Freeman on The Forecast, the Manchester Storm podcast. And your thoughts, David?
I did. I listened to my very first other, well, obviously, I spoke last year on the podcast last season that I listened to sort of the first 5 minutes of a Cat's Whiskers that the coach was going to be on. And then he started talking about, he was waxing lyrical about Jordan Fox. And I reached for the stop button because I couldn't be bothered listening to him, you know. You know, I'm not want to say what I say about, you know, about Jordan Fox, but, you know, I listened to the forecast, the very first episode. It had Seth Bennett on it, it had Coach on it, it had Pasha was on it. Very, very well produced, slick show. I'm going to download more forecasts and listen to them in the future. So who do you want me to go for this week?
I think for the next one, we're going to go for the Purple Army podcast, the podcast of the fans of the Brayhead clan.
I'll listen to their most up-to-date one.
And any other business?
Or if I go back to like the start?
No, you pick one, you go for it, mate.
Okay, I'll listen to their most up-to-date Purple Army podcast. And I don't know that I've got that much time in my life to be listening to the Hockey podcast. I spend enough time dissecting games and doing this one. But when I've got a spare hour, driving the car or whatever, I'll download the Purple Army. I've actually got Purple Army podcast on my iPhone already downloaded, so I don't know why I don't listen to him. It downloads every week, but I've never pressed play on one of them, so I'll give those boys a listen this week and come back to you next week.
It's like all of them, it's a good show. Any other business for you, gents? No, always a silence at this point. There's never ever really... Do you ever think about, actually, I must bring that up, or we just cover it all, do we? Listen, well, in that case, then, we'll say thanks to Hitchy, to Derek Walser, to Todd Kelman, Matt Nickerson, Aaron Murphy, and thanks to the Belfast Giants TV and Blaze TV for the audio from earlier on. And thanks to you guys for the fan agenda. Well done to Rand Donaldson. That free pass is heading your way. And thanks to everybody for listening. Next week's show is a bit of a landmark show for us, but we'll come back to that later in the week. I'll thanks to Mr. David McGimsey and Mr. Aaron Kernan.
You're very welcome. Good to talk, guys.
Yes. Thank you very much, guys. I enjoyed that as always. I think Davey spoke over me there whenever I said thanks.
well, sorry.
And on that note, before things kick off, wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey. We'll catch you here next time. One of you from the bridge.